This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Now, here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through Genesis chapters 15 through 18.
You know, there was a city a few miles from Abram's camp that offered to him all the world's glamour and pleasure. It was the Las Vegas of its day. Sodom was the hot spot. But the only thing in Sodom that Abraham really cared for was his nephew Lot. And when a confederation of Babylonian kings sacked Sodom and took Lot captive, Abraham gathered his militia and he launched a military raid against these kings and he retrieved his nephew Lot. Well, when he returned to the land of Canaan, he met two other kings, the king of Sodom and the king of Salem. The king of Sodom tried to reward him with spoils from the battle, but Abraham refused, lest anyone think that this wicked city of Sodom had made him rich. He was a man of integrity. Then he meets Melchizedek, who was the king of Salem, and he pays tithes to Melchizedek. He respects his authority. But when Abram gets home, it hits him. He's now made some enemies in Babylon, very angry. And it creates in him some anxiety. And that's when God speaks to him, beginning in chapter 15. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram." Now, he's concerned about King Chedorlaomer and his three eastern allies regrouping, refortifying their armies for another attack. But notice God assures him, "I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." Abraham had just turned down a reward from the king of Sodom. But the Lord comes to him and says, "Don't worry, you haven't lost anything by turning down the pleasures and rewards of this world, because I am your reward, Abraham. I am your protection and your shield. You have nothing to fear." Boy, we need to remember that ourselves, don't we? You know, it's our immaturity that looks to God for something from God, whether a reward from God or protection from God or a blessing from God. In reality, guys, God Himself is all we need. He is our shield. He is our reward. He is our most valuable reward. He is our dependable protection. He is our richest blessing. He says, "I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus?" Then Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir." You remember back in chapter 12, God laid the cornerstone in His plan for salvation. He initiated the fundamental agreement on which the remainder of the Bible will be constructed. We call it the Abrahamic Covenant. It's a threefold promise that God made to His people, to Abraham and his descendants. First of all, He promised to Abram a chunk of land. He promised him descendants, a great family. And He promised that through his family, the rest of the world would be blessed. God promised to Abram, and you want to write this down, He promised him land, He promised to make him a nation, and He promised that he would be a source of blessing. Property, posterity, and priority. And here's probably the best way to remember it, the three S's. You remember them from last week? Sod, seed, and salvation, the three promises in the Abrahamic covenant. The rest of the Bible builds on those promises, sod, seed, and salvation. Now, Abraham is thinking of this covenant, and he realizes that there's a problem. It all hinges on him having an heir, a child, and yet he lacks a son. His wife, Sarai, is barren, and following cultural custom, he's named his servant Eleazar to be his heir. Well, verse 4 tells us, "And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one shall not be your heir,'" that being Eleazar, "'but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir.'" Keep in mind, Abram was 85 years old at the time. This man has been on Social Security now for 20 years. He is no spring chicken. And yet God promises that through his body, he will sire a son. We're told then he brought him outside. God took him outside. Now remember, Abram is in the country. There's no smog. I mean, there's no ambient light from the shopping malls around. There was no Walmarts in Abraham's day. When Abraham looks up into the sky, now at that place in that time with no lights around him, he probably could see maybe 1,000, perhaps even 1,200 stars in the sky. And as he's looking up at the stars, as he's looking up into this night sky, we're told that God says to him, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." He's worried. "God, I don't have a child. And all these promises hinge on me having a son." God says, "Don't worry. Look into the heavens. Count the number of the stars. So will your descendants be." Abraham will not only have a son, but he will have thousands and thousands of great-great-grandkids, an innumerable multitude. One day, Abram will have an all-star family. Well, verse 6 is a key passage. "And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness." Oh, this is a great verse. Genesis 15, verse 6 is an oft-quoted verse. It appears four times, in fact, in the New Testament. In Romans chapter 4, verse 3. In Romans chapter 4, verse 22. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 6. And in James chapter 2, verse 23. This is the verse that Paul uses over and over to prove that we both obtain and maintain a right standing with God, not because of what we do or don't do, but because of our faith in God's promise. Abraham believed in the Lord, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. All God's blessings, guys, are received by faith and by faith alone. As Mark Twain once quipped, "Heaven goes by favor. If it went by merit, you would stay out and your dog would go in." God pours out his blessings, not on people who think they deserve it, but on folks who trust in God's amazing grace. Are you trusting in that grace tonight? I am. Verse 7. "Then he said to him, 'I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it.' And he said, 'Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it?'" Now, Abram is looking for some proof, for a confirmation. And he wants God to ratify this covenant, literally sign a contract with him. So God said to him, "Bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon." Then he brought all these to him and cut them in two down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds in two. This was the customary means by which people in that day signed their contracts. Here is how the ancients cut a deal. They would slaughter a series of animals, cut them in cross sections from the tip of their nose, you know, down their spine, you know, out their tail. They just cut them in half and cut them in cross sections. Then they would arrange the animal halves into a corridor. The two parties entering the agreement would then walk side by side, arm in arm, between the animal halves as their commitment to keep their end of the deal. It was cutting a covenant. You think a house closing is a hassle? Imagine signing one of these kinds of covenants. Well, verse 11 says, "And when the vultures came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away." Well, after slicing the beef, Abram sat down to wait on God. He expected God to literally walk with him, appear before him, walk with him through these animal halves. In fact, he waited all day and into the evening. In fact, he had to shoo away the vultures, waiting on God to appear. "Now, when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him." In other words, Abram had a nightmare. Then God said to Abram, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. Now, remember, Abraham is living around 2200 or so BC. God is predicting probably 400 years in advance the bondage, the Hebrew bondage in Egypt. And also the nation which they serve, I will judge. Afterward, they will come out with great possessions. When Moses led the Hebrews out of Egypt at the Exodus, they brought with them the spoils and the treasures of the Egyptians. God continues, now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried at a good old age, but in the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. In other words, Abram's neighbors will grow more and more corrupt. The Amorites will plunge into sexual perversion and will get involved in the occult. And God will use the Hebrews returning to the land to bring punishment and judgment on these wicked Amorites. Well, now, while Abram is dreaming, verse 17 tells us what happens next, and it's exciting. And it came to pass, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. According to custom, a covenant was sealed when both partners joined arms and walked together through the animal carcasses. They were saying to each other, they were saying to the world, that if they didn't fulfill their end of the deal, they'd be dead meat. Abram was expecting God to join him and join arms and walk with him. The two of them walked together through this carcass corridor. But that's not what happened. Instead, God walked through the corridor. God walked through the animal halves all by himself. When God walked through the animal parts, Abram was asleep. He had no part in it. In other words, God was saying that this covenant that he was making with Abraham, it will be a unilateral covenant. Totally one-sided covenant. This was not man's part and God's part. This was all God. He would complete his promises all by himself. He would do the work completely. Man's obligation would be to simply rest and put his faith in God. While Abram was in a deep sleep, God appeared in the form of a burning torch and a smoking censer. Later, God will appear to Abram's descendants, who come out of Egypt, as a cloud by day and as a fire by night, the same idioms being used. Perhaps Abram woke up just in time to see God walk down the carcass corridor all by himself. But that's all he did. Abram awoke, looked on, and believed. And here's the lesson for you and me. Salvation is never a tag team effort. It's not up to you and I to meet God halfway. The blessing of God is never received through our own efforts, by God doing half the work and us doing the other half of the work. No, God does all the work. He finished the work on the cross. He takes sole responsibility for earning our blessing. All we have to do is to wake up and to believe. Well, in verse 18, God clarifies the boundaries of the land that will be given to Abram. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt, or the Nile, to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. You know, all this land will be given to Abram. The debate today is whether Israel owns the west bank of the Jordan. But God says Abram owns all the land up to the west bank of the Euphrates. God has given the Hebrews not only today's disputed territories, the west bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights, but he's also given to Israel the lion's share of Egypt and Sinai and Lebanon and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Syria and Iraq and Kuwait. Today, the area of Israel is about 8,000 square miles, about the size of the state of New Jersey. But one day, Israel will possess these borders, 300,000 square miles of territory. This is the land that God's promised to Israel. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne no children. And she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. Now, you remember when the famine first struck in Canaan. Rather than trust God and stay put, Abram ventured off to Egypt, and there he picked up two items that would later cause him problems. Herds and Hagar. You remember that? The herds caused a conflict between he and Lot, caused them to separate. And this Hagar caused a conflict that still brews in the Middle East even today. By this time, Sarah is at least 75 years old. And even a mega dose of fertility drugs are going to do her no good. And so Sarah comes up with a plan. She will bear a child via a surrogate. So Sarah said to Abram, "See now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her." Now, this was a customary remedy for a barren woman, to have a child through her maidservant. I guess you could say this was the first example of surrogate motherhood. But though this was an accepted method, understand this was never God's method. Hey, not every great idea is God's idea. I hope you realize that. What's customary may not be godly. And every time God told Abram to be patient, his wife brought up Hagar. She sort of haggard him with Hagar. Finally, the old boy gave in. And Abraham took matters into his own hands. And rather than wait on God, rather than trust in God, he stepped out on his own. You know, the New Testament calls this walking in the flesh, relying on our own ingenuity, our own power, trusting in human resources rather than relying upon God to complete his promises his own way. Well, and Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. And then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. On that fateful day, Hagar went into Abram's tent, a maid, and came out a mom. And it ignited a bomb that is still being felt in the Middle East today. And when Sarai saw that Hagar had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Almost immediately, Hagar copped an attitude. She felt superior to the barren wife, Sarai, and she began to demand more and more of Abram's attention and support. And so Sarai said to Abram, "My wrong be upon you." Now, wait a minute, this was her idea. This was her idea, but now she blames it on her husband. "I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me." Boy, the baby isn't even born yet, and a battle erupts. Hagar gets haughty, Sarai gets jealous, and poor Abraham gets caught between two feuding females. So Abram said to Sarai, "Indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please." And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Sarai was mean. She was mean to Hagar and caused Hagar to run away from home. You remember the word Sarai means contentious. An old contentious. She hated Hagar. And she ran her off. But verse 7. "Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur." The way to Shur was the road back to Egypt. Apparently, Hagar is heading home. And that's when the Lord intercepts her. We're told the angel of the Lord appeared to her by a desert spring. And he said, "Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarai." Now understand who this angel might be. Often in the Old Testament, the angel of the Lord or the angel of Jehovah is actually a pre-Bethlehem, pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. The word angel simply means messenger, and at times it can refer to an angelic messenger, at other times a human messenger. It can even refer to a divine messenger. If this is Jesus appearing to her, it's a provocative, it proves a wonderful point a powerful message. This is the first appearance in the Bible of the angel of the Lord. There's no record of this angel appearing to Noah or to Enoch or to Abram, to these great heroes of the faith. No, his first appearance is to a Gentile woman who's been used and abused and discarded. That shouldn't surprise us, for Jesus was called a friend of sinners. Jesus is a friend to the friendless. He came to heal the brokenhearted. He came to set free the oppressed. It's interesting, in John chapter 4, Jesus will show compassion. He will offer forgiveness to a woman by the well in Samaria. But Genesis chapter 16 records the first woman at the well. It was Hagar. Well, the angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand." In other words, go and sin no more. The angel tells Hagar to stop her haughtiness. Her place is in Abram's tent. She's still Sarai's maid. She needs to trust God to work out the conflict between her and old contentious. And apparently, enduring that conflict, at least for a little while, and stay in the will of God was more important, more strategic than to seek comfort outside of God's will. I like the old saying, commitment is being willing to be uncomfortable for a while until you get things worked out. That's what commitment really is really all about. Hey, she wanted to be in God's will far more than she wanted to just be in a comfortable situation. And God blessed her because she humbled herself and returned. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, "I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so that they shall not be counted for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction." The name Ishmael means God hears. "He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." And the angel's description perfectly describes the descendants of Ishmael today, the Arabs. Throughout the centuries, God has multiplied the Arab nations just as he promised Hagar. But the Arabs have indeed proven to be a wild man. They have rebelled against the one true God. In fact, they have concocted a false religion, Islam, which encourages a violent and hostile struggle, or jihad, by Arabs against non-Arabs. As the angel predicted, his hand shall be against every man, and Arab history is one bloody conflict after another. And true to the angel's word, even today the Arabs live among the Jews in Israel. They dwell in the presence of their brothers, but certainly as a thorn in their side. Verse 13 tells us, "Then she called the name of the Lord, who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees.' For she said, 'Have I also here seen him who sees me?' Therefore the well was called Beer Lahoi Roy." Observe, it is between Kadesh and Bered. The name Beer Lahoi Roy means well of the living one who sees. I hope you realize tonight that the God you serve is the God who sees. That he sees your hurt, he sees your pain. He sees the struggles that you're going through tonight. He sees that struggle you're having at work, that bout with an illness. He understands and sees the problems at home, the crumbling marriage, the hostility between you and your kids. Understand, your situation is not being overlooked. God sees, God knows, God cares. You are at the center of God's radar screen. He knows and understands, and he wants to help you in your struggle.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the first book of the Bible, Genesis. You can learn a great deal about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at the website, you'll find today's message and many other messages from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area, or will be visiting anytime soon, you can get directions and times for our worship services. Again, the website for all this information is sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the book of Genesis. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.